Studio 360.
It's still hard to fathom that Donald Trump is actually the Republican nominee, and a month from now may be elected president. It seems not quite really real. Is it reality television real or pro wrestling real? But then when I hold it up to the light, Trump's political success makes a kind of awful sense, because presidential politics have been morphing into entertainment since I was a kid.
I do not think it altogether inappropriate to introduce myself. I am the man who accompanied Jacqueline Kennedy to Paris, and I've enjoyed it.
1960, John F. Kennedy, young, dashing, witty, sexy. He'd also been a naval hero in the Second World War.
Oh, you don't want this, Mr. Kennedy. Believe me, I've been in this Navy. The worst thing you could do is let him trick you into an ocean.
Well, I can't ask for a transfer.
The actor Cliff Robertson playing JFK in the movie PT-109, with an actor named Lou Gallo playing one of his crew.
Of course you can. You got the juice. You got the pliers down there in Washington.
The juice?
Juice, muscle, glycerin. Don't they teach you any practical talk at Harvard?
It's an elective.
PT-109 came out in the summer of 1963 when Kennedy was in office. So you'd watch Walter Cronkite on the evening news talk about what the president did that day, and then you'd go out to the movies, buy your popcorn and milk duds, and watch the president depicted in a war movie.
Maybe it's not too late. Tell him you went psycho. You ate some poisoned meat. You woke up dizzy.
It's too late, Rogers, and I'm surprised at you. Where's your spirit?
But even more unsettling, the way Hollywood kowtowed to the White House to make that movie. Kennedy was actually allowed to choose the director and the actor who'd play him. His first choice was Warren Beatty, who passed on the role. And the studio even let the White House read the script and give notes on it before the film was shot. Remember, this is a president who just celebrated his 45th birthday on stage at Madison Square Garden with the ultimate Hollywood dream girl.
Happy birthday, Mr. President.
After JFK, it was kind of hard for other politicians running for president not to look lame, uncharismatic, miscast. But over the next few decades, politics adapted. And then... candidate Bill Clinton in 1992 on the Arsenio Hall Late Night Show, playing the sax and wearing Ray-Bans. Clinton didn't just sit down for an interview. He actually performed. And his whole presidency ended up being like a primetime melodrama. Sexual indiscretion, accusations of financial skullduggery, nearly overthrown. It was like an episode of Dallas. And with all those wild plot twists before and during his impeachment, Clinton's popularity actually rose, which paved the way for a new era of fictional presidents in movies and TV shows. Audiences came to expect to see the private dramas and demons of the leader of the free world.
I don't know how to address you. Would you prefer Jed or Mr. President?
To be honest, I prefer Mr. President.
This is Martin Sheen as President Jed Bartlett on The West Wing.
You understand why, right?
Do I need to know why?
It's not ego.
I didn't think it was.
There are certain decisions I have to make while I'm in this room. Do I send troops into harm's way? Which fatal disease gets the most research money?
Sure.
It's helpful in those situations not to think of yourself as the man, but as the office.
Then, Mr. President, it is.
Think about what's going on in that clip. It's Martin Sheen playing the role of a current president and talking in character about how to play the role of a president in office. If anybody understood that political leaders could and should play roles the way actors do, it was this guy.
Jack Warner of Warner Brothers. I'd been under contract for a number of years, heard that I was running for governor. I understood that he said, no, Jimmy Stewart for governor, Ronald Reagan for best friend.
Coming from the movies himself, he realized that the presidency was a form of movie.
and that if you could successfully convert the presidency into a film, you could have the same kind of effect on an audience that a movie had.
That's the author and film scholar Neil Gabler. He wrote the book on how entertainment has come to reshape reality, including politics. It's called, appropriately, Life the Movie. I interviewed him at his house on Eastern Long Island.
I've lived here for 24 years, believe it or not.
And you'll even hear a few crickets and birds in his yard as we talk.
Maybe I shouldn't be living out here, but I am.
Reagan was, of course, the first time we elected an actor, a professional Hollywood actor, as president. And I want to play a clip of Reagan while he was president in 1985.
I have my veto pen drawn and ready for any tax increase that Congress might even think of sending up. And I have only one thing to say to the tax increasers. Go ahead, make my day.
Which is, of course, a Dirty Harry reference. People throw movie lines around, but Reagan did it a lot. And it had, it seems, more significance in his presidency, right?
Ronald Reagan was the first president who really understood that stagecraft wasn't just a part of the political process. After all, Franklin Roosevelt understood stagecraft. He knew how to deploy it. Ronald Reagan was the first president who understood that stagecraft is the presidency. And the president wasn't really a politician. He was an actor.
Right.
And that notion of "It's Morning in America," his famous ad from 1984, he wanted to be the president of feel good. And that's what movies generally do, not all movies, obviously, but movies often leave us with a sense that all is right with the world.
It's morning again in America. And under the leadership of President Reagan, our country is prouder and stronger and better.
Who wouldn't want to go see a movie where it says, "Americans, it's morning in America"? Aren't you happy?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to enter that theater.
Right.
Reagan understood that if he could make Americans feel that way, it didn't make any difference what he did in terms of substantive policy. That policy fell by the wayside in terms of this larger psychological impulse that he could generate. He'd internalized the movies. He'd internalized entertainment.
Right.
He lived within it. It had, in some ways, colonized his own brain.
Yeah. It's really true, such as this moment I love from President Reagan's 1984 debate with Walter Mondale.
I think the people should understand that two-thirds of the defense budget pays for pay and salary, or pay and pension. And then you add to that food and wardrobe and all the other things, and you only have a small portion going for weapons.
I love that at the time. I've loved the wardrobe. We usually call them
that
uniforms.
That wardrobe budget. I'll tell you, that's what's killing us, is the wardrobe budget.
I know. Now, in our lifetime, who were the not-so-good performers as who were president?
I mean, Jimmy Carter clearly was, I think, a very poor performer. First of all, he didn't like the audience. You know, Kennedy seemed to like the audience. Obviously, Reagan loved the audience. Carter did not like the audience.
Right.
I mean, he was a Navy engineer. You know, what role are you going to cast a Navy engineer in?
Yeah.
These candidates are auditioning for a role. And I'll tell you, the movies have not done our presidential candidates any favors in terms of the way that they have portrayed heroism. Because, you know, the primary theme of our movies is the idea that an individual, through his own agency, can make everything right.
Right, right.
And that becomes part of our consciousness.
Right.
We're looking for a president who's going to be Batman.
Well, one of the paradoxes of Donald Trump is he is, as you say, all candidates must be performers. He's a guy who had his actual reality show training for more than a decade to get ready for this campaign. But it's his authenticity that is so attractive to the people who like him. He is simultaneously a pure reality show, circusy performer, but whoa, he's being real. He's saying what we all think.
Well, he's playing within an American type. And that American type is basically, you know, the iconoclast. This is a long tradition in American entertainment, the person who doesn't abide by the social order. And so what he's doing very cleverly is he's merged two things. He's merged the entertainment type of the iconoclast with the idea of the reality television personality so that he is a real iconoclast.
Right, right.
One of the most interesting comments in this campaign was one I heard Mitch McConnell make, where he said that he approached Trump at the NRA convention and he said to him, you know, you ought to read off a teleprompter. And Trump said to him, can't do it. I'd be boring.
Yes.
How many candidates have ever thought about the engine of their candidacy being not boring?
Yeah.
I don't think Hillary Clinton sits there and says, am I going to be boring today?
I don't think so. So if Donald Trump becomes President Trump, what are the implications in terms of the performative show business aspects of the presidency?
Well, we're going to have a presidency that follows the contours of Reagan in the sense that it's going to be a movie, but the movie is a very, very different movie than the one that Ronald Reagan presented, which right. was a genial, uplifting kind of film. You know, this would be 4 years of a very angry, resentful kind of movie. When you see vengeance on the screen, it's on the screen, and it stays there. Vengeance in real life in the office of the presidency is another thing entirely. 50 years from now, historians are going to look at this period and they're going to be scratching their heads and wondering, how in the world did this happen? And the answer will be entertainment. That's how it happened.